Accession number 14972, Richard Atkinson, reel 17.
Mr. Atkinson, reel 17. The island position was particularly unpleasant, Mr. Atkinson, is that so?
Oh, yes. It was awkward to get, over this bridge. It was like a tent bridge with a big hole in the middle of it. Barely a bridge over it, which you had to go slow, because bump. And when you got over there, you had flooded the island. Well, it was the orchards, and you had flooded it, so just the roads was raised up, and you were stuck. You couldn't get off. You're on observation. The lad was living in water and things like that, and there's no way you could do anything. We're utter waste of time, just miserable, wet, lousy conditions. Winter was coming in, and you're constantly wet, having to bring the lad out into Nijmegen for giving them clean clothes and a wash and warm them up and things like that.
Was this done on a very regular basis, bringing them out?
Well, as regular as possible. They only come out for a wash and whatnot. I mean, they wouldn't be out for days. Just come over and, I mean, it wasn't a position you could defend, because he couldn't get at it and you couldn't do anything, because there's a river between them. And until the parrots, we could hear the parrots fighting, but we couldn't get near them.
This was at Darnham.
At Darnham. They were at Darnham, which is just over the sort of little tributary thing. Which we couldn't get at them. See, that's the trouble. And it was raining and miserable, and the pilots had to come out, and they brought these rubber boats up, and the Canadians brought them across this tributary out. And Nijmegen, to a place called, it was like a pagoda. We called it a pagoda, and all their uniforms was left lying there. They gave them clean stuff and took them up there, and their uniform, and that was just left lying there.
What were the conditions that you were actually living in?
Well, we were living in Nijmegen, and we were in the houses, and the civilians was letting us sleep in their rooms and whatnot, which weren't supposed to. We were supposed to be in the vehicles, but naturally you're nipping away for a nice, comfortable bed each night and whatnot, and living amongst the civilians, which you shouldn't have been. A lot of fellas got friendly with the Dutch people, and still to this day write to them and whatnot. But Nijmegen was a shambles. It was real bombed and shelled, and a bit like Ypres in the First World War. Everything was a...
You weren't able to get back, say, to Brussels or somewhere for a few
days?
No.
There's no way you could go no further than Nijmegen. That was your limit. But before then, they had been organised, and you could have... You got to, like when we're in Holland and those places, you got to... After the threat of the V2s and the V1s, after that threat was over, you got a 40-hour pass to Brussels, and they had proper centres where you could sleep a couple of nights. And trucks took you in, but the service corps did that. They run you back and brought you back up again to a point where we picked them up, near enough. But there was 48 hours allowed to Brussels. I think I had one. But I don't know if there's English leave going, but... There must have been, but I had a 48 to Brussels, I can remember that.
And you put up in these camps, were you?
No, there were hotels that took over, like a transit camp. They called it a transit camp, but there were hotel things, you could bed down, you had a bed, and you roamed for the day, because Brussels, the shops had stuff in, things like that. I think I bought the wife a gold necklace or something, but a lot of fellas buying perfume and stuff like that. And I think it was two nights. So it was 3 days a year away from the unit. By the time you got out and back, it was 48.
Was there much to do other than shopping?
No, just booze, and that's all you sort of thought of. Much round shops. You didn't have that much money to start with, but you had much round shops and booze and the lot.
Were you still a private at this time?
Yes, I didn't want to be anything else. I was offered it time and time again, but... Germans looked for stripes and killed them, so I didn't want nothing to do with that. Anyway, I didn't need it, you see, because We were all missing, you know, the army, you're not allowed with the sergeant, must mess, associate with the sergeant, the corporal. But that didn't go in the Durhams. We'd all just go together. And if they were going to sergeant's mess, someone say, oh, Dick, yes, three stripes, put them up, and I'm just going to mess with them. Or they would take a stripe down and go into nothing, things like that. But I could have been NCO, but I didn't want it.
What do you remember of the changing situation when the division was broken up? What news, what eventually started, well, what started
well,
that off?
Well, that was Nijmegen, and I don't know. We were just suddenly told we were going to Sittard and Geleen in Holland, and that was it. We didn't know. Then we came down there, and all of a sudden the transport had to be shined up, and the TTs was pinned out, and the Desert Rat went on. That was our first inclination. The old Desert Rat went on, and we became 7th Armoured. And then, of course, the division had taken such a pacing by this time, men was come from the 6th and 8th to make us up. And the other man was told, they conned them again, as typical. They said, hey, you've got a lot of service in. We're reforming the cadre in England for the former division. And they all thought they were going back to England. So naturally, they didn't want, yeah, to come to the 9th. So we got 6th and 8th, we're made up from them, and these other poor so-and-sos, they got shipped to Eritrea, Italy, all over the place. And they thought they were going back. Two or three officers went back, but that was all.
Were the 6th and 8th people coming to you, were they happy that they were going to continue?
No, because they thought they wanted to go back to England to form a new division. We were saying, why are we left out? Why can't we go back to England? And it was a typical army, you know, how they camouflage things. And then we suddenly had the Desert Rat up and were armoured infantry.
Did this change your particular role in any way?
Oh, yes. We were motorised infantry before that, and we suddenly became armoured infantry. We got issued with tank suits and all sorts. You see, when you're driving for the infantry, you got goggles, beautiful leather goggles, air gauntlets, goggles and all sorts of stuff. And come with a tank thing, we suddenly got tank suits. They were beautiful things, zips up that could come with a sleeping bag and all sorts. And they were in a proper tank berry and whatnot. We suddenly became armoured infantry. The fellas were getting a white suit. There was snow and they were going to get a white suit to fight and things like that.
Where did you go with the armoured division?
Well, we crossed the line with us, with them. That's when we... I can't remember the name, Exon or something. It was a funny name, I can't remember it, to be honest. But we crossed the line with the 7th Armoured, and then we fought out. We had one big battle. The brigade had its last big battle at Giel, where we lost a lot of men, was taken prisoner. And we fought this big, other big battle in Germany, and I don't know the name of that. It was around about Bremen somewhere, Hamburg. Because it was a schoolmaster, and were training young kids to be officer cadets, and were vicious little so and so. They fought the last fingernail sort of style. You're fighting 12, 14-year-olds, but you didn't give them a hit of the limit. Think because they were vicious little so and so's, and the headmaster was a fanatic. Nazi fanatic, and he had these the same, and we fought in a forest, which is atrocious conditions, snow and stuff, and we finished up outside Hamburg on Luneburg Heath. That's when he comes through to sign the
game to us. Can we go back to the crossing of the Rhine? What do you remember of that? Because that was quite a historic event.
Yes. Well, the lads crossed in rubber boats, and they crossed it, and the airborne landed on the other side. Because I remember standing watching the glare hitting the side of the house and bedding itself in the gable end of a house, things like that. But they were over and threw a pontoon over, and we crossed on a pontoon because the Rhine's a wide river and a fast river. And I think they converted the railway bridge to take transport over to get it over, then they put a proper bridge. I think the Americans built a bridge, if I'm not mistaken. At Basel, was it? We just called Weasel, it was Basel. And that was the big arm. You just cross there, really cross and then leave and things like that, just cross there.
What were your feelings of going over into Germany after all these years
of
war?
Oh, conquering heroes. Oh, we were the conquering heroes, you know. We let them know. We stomped around the same as they did in France and those places we did. And the funny part, we went down this farmer's day, and there's a duck pond there, and there's four or five ducks flapping around on it. Somebody says, "Hey, we'll have duck for dinner." And we're all standing there with cross rifles on our sleeves, marksmen, snipers, you name it, it was all up decoration. Finding the ducks, we couldn't hit them, we had to walk on, waiting with a stick and knuckle over the stick. The German farmer was to say, "How the hell are these beaters?" but that's the way we'll perform once we got to Germany.
What was happening as you went through the villages and towns of Germany?
You weren't allowed any contact, no fraternisation, it was all taboo. You weren't allowed to tolerate them at any price. And if you went into, say, this house here, you decided you're going to stop the night here, they had to be thrown out. Regardless of where they went, they had to be thrown out, and you took it. No ifs or buts. And it wasn't in our nature, we just let them go into cellars and stuff. It wasn't our nature to do that, but that was the order. No fraternisation. But then, yeah, you see a fellow falling up the road behind a woman kind of blanket, and you knew what was going on. But it wasn't supposed to be. But that was no fraternisation, and you mustn't tolerate them at any price.
How were they showing you as you're coming into these places?
Well, I was stunned.
They
were stunned. They just couldn't believe it, because you hadn't told them, to be honest. And that'll have put, when they start wrecking tank tops and streets and stuff like that. I mean, the first place I can really remember is Solingen, where they made all the German razors and stuff. You know, cutthroat razor. It was a famous steel town, evidently. And I went in there, and actually, waking around, what do I get to find? And I found this BMW car covered over that, and I messed around, got it running, put some petrol in, got it running. Drove the quarter must around for a bit, and the Red Caps took it off us. Shouldn't be, you shouldn't. It had no markings on it. Yeah, it could have been anybody, it could have been Germans. Had no British markings on it. But you're not supposed to do that. He was laying down there, I was driving around it. But it was taken confiscated, of course. But that's the sort of thing he did, you see. When, and he just didn't probably, if a German, he just shooed him away, shoved him away. He didn't even talk to him. And they see you and picking up stuff.
Were they showing any material to say that they were surrendering? Was there any white?
Oh, no.
Things
no,
coming
no,
out
no,
of the...
No, no. But it didn't matter who you did speak to later on when you spoke to them. We used to say to them, "Well, you were Nazi, were you?" No, nothing to do with that. We should say to them, "Well, every photograph you see, millions of you, you got your hands up and you say, Heil Hitler, and you put your hands up. Oh, no, not me, my neighbour." But it was never them. But, I mean, they all did it. I mean, one place where a dartboard on the wall, and there was a photograph of Hitler, and we used to throw a dart at it. And this girl, she came in, she was doing her washing, she was only about 14 years old, a German girl, washing her clothes for us. And she used to take the photograph down and smooth all the dart marks out, you know, the pinhole, religiously. And we used to put it back up and throw a dart at it. But every time she came in, she says, "Oh no, I didn't like Hitler." But I says, "Well, you do that to him." But that's the type of... They were stunned. They didn't, you know, they, I don't think they realised what had hit them.
Were they Sillen as well?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, the one cooperative. Well, they couldn't be, because you weren't allowed to talk to them that, and you just did what you wanted, took what you wanted. So they had every right to be Sillen. But they got your road, they didn't... Well, looked at themselves again. And anyway, if the houses hadn't been battered down, you know, which the majority of them were, those shambles, they're just living in the shambles, they had a terrible life. And everything was disorganized. They didn't know where that people was, not trying to trace people, because there was no post. And the army was taking over military governors. Then you see those sort of run places, it was a military governor.
Were you still on the same routine of duties with your
yes,
truck?
Yes, but it was... You had to be more on your guard now. You know, they're talking about werewolves and that sort of business and underground movement. You had to be more on your guard now. You couldn't just go swan about at night time. You had to sort of keep in contact. There's no free and easy business now. It was all strict military discipline.
Were there any problems with German guerrillas?
No. Well, I don't think we ever come across any. someone used to reckon they were stretching wires across roads and knocking down autos off. So they put big lump of metal up the front of trucks, and if it hit it, would just snap it, like a lump of angle iron up the front. Because the jeeps is not, had no tops on, you see, and the vehicles had no tops on, it could cut your head off. But I never come across any, but that's what they reckon they're doing, and so they put this thing on.
So you were coming through, you've crossed the Rhine, you came through the German countryside, yeah, obviously.
Bremen and Hamburg, up we on.
And it was pretty routine, there was nothing going on that would cause you any problems on your journey through.
No, just the usual fighting, you know, the rear guards and whatnot, and fighting them, like. But we had these two big battles, and that was I think that was the last we fought them. After that was just when the Germans come to sign the armistice at Hamburg. Well, they came through our lines, the 9th, and somebody says, oh, that's Donetsk and whatnot, and I came on leave. I got a 10-day leave, and I came on leave, and I says to Joan in London, I says, there's something big on, I says, because the Germans have come through our lines, because our lads took our watches off them and had to hand them back to us. You know, they said, you mustn't do that, you know. He reported that whoever, it wasn't Montgomery, it was the military governor that was there, and we had to hand them all back. Whoever took them, with some company, and I come on leave, I says, there's something big happening, and I said, oh, there'll be an announcement in 10 days' time. So actually, he had been through and sorted all this out 10 days before it was announced, because I was on my way back, and I was in Brussels again, changing trains, when he announced the armistice. The surrender.
But did you see the Germans actually coming through?
Yes. Came off, came down with that truck through Lüneburg, Hamburg. Well, Hamburg was burned out to where the governor was. And then must arrange for Monty to come up, and he chased him back, and, you know, he had to come back with a senior officer and all this. But by the same, I'd come on leave. But I saw the first lot come through.
What was your feelings when you knew the war had finished?
We didn't know. See, it had come through, and I came on leave, and I said, oh, there's something big happening, but I didn't know what. You know, we've seen admirals and whatnot come through, and they actually, we had no idea where we were. We just knew we were on the outskirts of Hamburg. And I said, and then when he announced it, that thing, well, I was on the train going back up. So,
and how did you feel at that moment?
Well, I was annoyed because I'd missed everything. You see, I'd missed everything, all the celebrations in London, and the lads had that, they reckon it was like Guy Fawkes, you know, they were firing rounds in the sky, and the Bofors was firing, and all the lads was letting off steam and all that. Tracers going up. But I missed it both ways because I was on the train. Well, by this time we're in Hamburg, Hanover. So I rejoined them. See, there's another thing, see, on the train, when you cross the Weser, it says, man, your regiment's gone to so-and-so. Get the green train or something, see, and you got there. You pick them up there again.
What was the task there?
Oh, well, we're getting ready for we suddenly had to get smartened up, and we're headed to Brunswick and crossed into Berlin. We went to Berlin with Russians.
And this was quickly after?
Oh, yes, quick. Yes. I just rejoined them and said, hey, you go, come on, get the truck overhauled, smartened up and cleaned up and whatnot. You know, had to look posh, you know, polish them up and get pressed up and whatnot. And I remember we crossed over at Brunswick, crossed the road, the main road, on the Autobahn, and that's where the Russian checkpoint was. Went through, drove up the Autobahn into Berlin.
This was the whole battalion?
Yes. The whole division was good, but we were the spearhead.
What were you doing in Berlin?
Well, it was showing off more than anything. It was just like ceremonial duties. I think we had a victory parade. Well, they had a victory parade when we were there. But you just used to do police duties and stuff like that, you know, stopping black markets. And the Russians were just looting and going around houses and shipping stuff to Russia en masse and train loads of it. But they had that was their way of living, that's it, live off where they were. And we were letting in the naffies, but they were pulling their revolvers and firing, what, stopping coming to our naffies. Because we had nothing, everything in there.
What was this, when they got drunk or something?
Yeah. Yeah, we had to stop them, and it was all women, Russian women controlling the traffic, you know, with two flags, and you couldn't understand them, and all. But he just sort of did general duties, and raking around, we used to find a brewery and go and confiscate some beer for ourselves and whatnot. But I think were in the Brandenburg area, that's where we were billeted. You just picked the place, the barracks, or ministry or whatever it was, and all they did was get a place that had a decent roof, you know, somewhere sort of a roof, shelter, because our open one cupboard door, and medals by the hundreds fell out. There were medals for being on the Russian front, and the cupboard full of them, you know, you shoved it was, they didn't pick any up, they couldn't be bothered with them. That was spent in Berlin.
Were the Berlin people different from the countryside people?
Oh, yes. They were concerned was they were all running around with their briefcases trying to flog your stuff, cameras and anything for to get bread. It was all that, that you dealt in, you know, cigarettes. There was that was no currency. It was all cigarettes, and if you wanted cameras or guns, or you had this part of business.
Did you get involved in the black market?
Oh yes, everybody.
And how did it operate?
Well, everything had a fixed price. Two cigarettes for so and so, and see if you come and leave, you go and leave. You should take back a bicycle and a tubes, coffee, stuff like that, stuff you could carry, but you could get in this country, and you couldn't get. See if you wanted cameras or whatever you wanted, yeah. Had its price, and they would do anything for coffee and bicycle tubes and food, any sort of food. And you cut your own rations. Your cook always was there. Everybody's in the fiddle. You know, you could flog them stuff. But everything was there at a price, and you could get what you wanted. Fur coats, you know, anything like that. It was no good to them. They wanted food.
What did Berlin look like?
Oh, it was a shambles. You know, it was the RAF had certainly made a good. What the RAF hadn't done, the Russians had done. My first impression of Berlin was when you went in, every lamppost had little red flags tied on it. We said, oh, there's the Russians showing up again. But it wasn't. It was shown that been there and cleared it. That any other Russian, because there weren't crack Russian troops on the Mongolian. They were all Mongolians. There weren't any good troops. And that's. So they knew that was their area that cleaned it and whatnot. These little red flags. Well, first thing we did was take all them things down. Didn't want them. But I mean, I arrested two colonels one night in this house taking stuff. And the guard room in this place when was just a hole in the ground underneath a cellar. And given what the guard had left over, fish or something for supper. And they thanked us for that treatment. And I didn't know they were colonels. I mean, they all looked the same to me.
Russians.
But there's no checkpoints then. You just went, the whole of Berlin, you could go anywhere. Yet you are warned, be very careful against the Russian sector, because they'll hold you for a day and throw you back out, which they did. And if you're driving, they'll confiscate the truck, and you would never see that again. If you went into their sector for cement or something, which they did often, stuff like that, if they say they're going to do something, they'd say, oh, there's a cement factory in that part of Berlin, and you'd go. And this truck broke down this day, and the by the time we got back, the driver, Walter Bergen, had been locked up somewhere and handed him back the next morning, but we never ever saw the truck again. That's the way it was. There was no love lost between us, by any means. We didn't, you know, if we're raiding the black market and they wanted to see something, you know, organised raid with the red caps and that, and they were dealing, they'll get locked up the same as anybody else. What happened, I don't know, but they'll get locked up.
The Americans, they would be there.
They were there, and the French. We were connected mostly more with the French, because they were in Spandau, which was next door to us. We were in Brandenburg, you know, Brandenburg Gate, and that was in our area.
Did you get on all right with the French?
Well, you know, you sign language and whatnot, you made yourself known. And because the Americans, they had the aerodrome, Tempelhof, which we didn't go into their sector very much. There's no love lost with Americans with that. Usual bombastic way in their money. They spoiled all black markets because they just paid any price that was asked. You see, that didn't wash very well with us. So, but they got around, not bad with the French and the ones.
Had you any trouble with the German people in the city?
No, they were scared to death.
Crime, anything of that nature?
Well, no, I don't think. You see. There's nothing they could do. They had nowhere to go. They had no clubs, no nothing to do. We had just took everything over, literally. There's nothing they could do. All they could do was talk to us and barter, which by this time the fraternization ban had been lifted because they knew it was useless. And it had been lifted, and they could just talk and that. But there's nothing they could do because it was military law, and we run everything. It was, you know, a control commission. And they just had to give way to everything that was said and done.
What was your task in the city?
I think it was just show off, you know, just for these ceremonial duties and whatnot, and just to show the British flag, I think.
Were you involved in bringing in supplies and taking stuff out of that nature?
No. You see, oh yes, I used to go out with through to Brunswick to get stuff here for the officers' horses. See, they had horses by this time. They were living the life really. I think it was Wren was looking after them, and they used to move them. They used to go on one of the trucks, and they're here now. You go for stuff. So in the English sector in Brunswick now, you used to go down the autobahn. But there again, you see, you had police dogs with you by this time, and there was one allocated to your truck, and he sat there with you, and he was trained. Any other uniform come after you, took their head off, because the Russians would arrest you, you see. And that dog was there with you, but you weren't allowed to be friends with it. You know, I think it was the Metropolitan Police that was there with them. They had them. You go to Brunswick and get whatever it was or what it wasn't to do, and come back. And when you come back, you just hand it back to whoever was in charge of them. I've got photographs of them dogs romping over us on a green thing next to a Russian grave, actually. But they weren't your dogs. They were there for, and your police were there, mind, because they would make sure that you got there and left.
You'd have to go through a Russian checkpoint on these.
Russian checkpoint.
Was that difficult to do?
Yes. You're lined up in the queue like customs now, and you come down and they walk around your truck and look at your truck and look in the back and whatnot, and away you through. Because the red caps on the other side of the road were our checkpoint, you see, and they were watching you to make sure everything was all right. And when you come through, they check you where you're going, what your job was. So then you come back, you report to them. Of course, you had to report to them now because it was all Russia. You know, Brunswick was a long way from Berlin. You know, you're talking about maybe 6-hour drive down the Autobahn. So, yeah, it was all Russian safety you're driving through. And so you had to check in, check out, so that you knew who was in Berlin, who wasn't.
And you carry a pass with you, no doubt, of some kind.
Just your identification, your work ticket, what you're supposed to be doing. Well, work ticket, you used to fill them in yourself, put anything on there. If you kept collecting here for officers' horses and wouldn't dare put that on, you'd be going down for some stuff for the pioneers or something like that, you see.
How long were you in Berlin?
About 5 months, I think.
And did you move elsewhere, or were you demobbed from there?
No, we weren't demobbed. We came back to Unna, a little pit village in Germany, and I was demobbed from there. But but by this time, you see, they had started. Election was coming, and we were sort of briefing you on different politicians and how it worked, because we had never voted before in our lives. And these, I forget what they call it, these classes I had, or not economics, current affairs things. You still have to go to school. You have to go to school for education, things like that. I've got a shocking report because I wouldn't do it. And I failed at this and I failed at that. I said, I'm not yet to learn maths and stuff again. And these current affairs used to lecture on politics and whatnot, and how to vote and all this gave. So all the classes started because idle time, people was getting involved, you see, and whatnot. And this was a comeback to sort of peacetime army. And then we came out, as I say, then we came out of Berlin down to Unna for demobbed.
Was that obviously was a changed situation? Was there a great difference now between Berlin people and the people at this stage in the country?
Well, come back amongst country folk now, and had the boozers and all sorts. See, there wasn't damage. It was a pit village actually, which suited Durham's because amongst their own folk, and you go in these pubs and you booze and get rotten drunk and stuff. Because that's what all there was, to be honest. And these classes, current affair classes and stuff.
Was the relationships changing at all at this stage?
With the Germans? No, it was still. They served you, they were friendly, there couldn't be anything else, but that was it. And if it suited you, you could, you know, tell them what you thought of them, because you could do nothing about it. But, you know, I wouldn't say they were friendly. They were, well, they sucked up to get what they wanted. They used you as much as you used them.
During the whole of the Northwestern Europe campaign, had the mail come regularly? Was that still
regular? Yes, come regularly. Yeah, cigarettes from England. Even in the Middle East, anywhere, you know, how your parents could go into a shop and order 200 senior service, or what it was, and used to come through, and your mail come through regularly. Because it was only doing army post office, but your postcard went down and collected it and whatnot, and company distributors. Oh, everything was that was all regular, yes, you could count on that. And your letters home was regular.